stated earlier, the first case today will be number 181621, John R. Bartolomeo v. United States.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Bernard Grossberg for the petitioner appellant, John Bartolomeo. The essence of the appeal is a simple proposition that the sentence imposed on Mr. Bartolomeo in the district court consisted of two segments. The first segment being the sentence imposed for his guilty plea to the drug offenses and the calculation that was done under the guidelines as they existed in 1998. The second segment was the upward departure for the uncharged conduct. The petitioner has asserted in his motion under 2255 that he must be resentenced given the fact that he is no longer a career offender by virtue of the Supreme Court's decision in Johnson, and that he must be resentenced as to the drug segment portion of his sentence. The upward departure would still stand in effect. The difference being that the district court at the time that the petitioner was sentenced found, since he was a career offender, the sentence for the drug offenses was 27 years because he wound up in criminal history category 6. And now, once the designation of career offender is removed, he would be placed in category 3. And his underlying drug conviction sentence would be 13 to 16 years plus the 8 years that Judge Young found was appropriate for the upward departure given the uncharged.
Counsel, excuse me. In looking at the transcript of the combined plea and sentencing hearing, I came away with the impression, and I would like you to respond to that, why my impression is probably not right, that the court was concerned there for sure with the guidelines calculation, but I have the impression that he thought it was important, and it is important, that the defendant understand what the guidelines calculation would be, but it really wasn't all that important to him in terms of the upward departure of 35 years. And what we're concerned about here is how the guidelines calculation, whether it was or was not important to him as opposed to the defendant. What's wrong with that reading of what was happening?
The problem with that reading is that there has to be a guideline calculation and a sentence calculated under the guidelines so that the court knows from the point from which it departs. If you simply say, well, he gets 35 years, that's not what sentencing entailed, because Judge Young painstakingly went through the guideline calculation. Following Your Honor's
reasoning. Yes, because he wanted to be sure that the defendant understood what that calculation was.
But the point is, there's no explanation of where the departure starts from. The key word is from. He's going to get an 8-year additional sentence. 8 years from where? And that's why I submit to Your Honor that the calculation has to first be the calculation for the drug offenses, then the upward departure, and now, given the change in the law, he is entitled to have the drug portion sentence reduced. Your Honor's question, in my eyes, gets to the raises the issue of was this sentence 35 years no matter what? Well, that's not the situation because, one, there would have been a binding plea agreement if the parties had agreed to 35 years. But there wasn't a binding plea agreement at that time, and explicitly stated in the plea agreement, the plea was entered under 11E1B, which was not binding. Secondly, if it was a 35-year sentence and nothing further, why was paragraph 8C included in the plea agreement, which expressly gave the petitioner the right to appeal the sentence if there was, as there is, a change in the law? If it was 35 years, no matter what, the 8C would not have been included in the plea agreement.
Counsel, I'm sorry, I'm simply not following your binding agreement argument. If, in fact, the judge accepted the recommendation of 35 years on the understanding that your client was avoiding a murder charge, which would have put him in prison for the rest of his life. He was avoiding both state and federal murder charges. And indeed, at the plea hearing, he agreed that he had intentionally killed this other man. If that was, in fact, the basis for the sentence that was entered, as Judge Zobel found, what is wrong with that, and why is the binding or non-binding nature of the agreement relevant at all to the sentence that was actually given?
Because the reasoning of the petitioner at that part, at that time, was I'm getting 27 years because I'm career...
I see, in order to avoid a life sentence. He was so influenced by the guidelines calculation that that's what we should think is important here?
If he was going to get a sentence that was imposed without the career offender designation, it would have been somewhere in the area of 13 to 16 years.
Judge Zobel said he has not met his burden of proof to show there was a reasonable probability that the sentence would have been otherwise. And isn't that a factual determination that we review for clear error?
Well, I did argue that in the brief.
Answer my question. Isn't that a factual determination?
Her factual determination.
And yes. We review that for clear error, correct?
Exactly.
So what is the clear error?
The clear error is that was it not for the designation as a career offender, he would not have agreed to the upward departure. If he was facing 13 and 16, in that range, as opposed to 27, the 8 years would have not been something he agreed to because it wasn't exactly a murder charge. It was a vehicular homicide charge to which he claimed he had a defense. But once the offer was made to throw all of that potential litigation and charges in, and he was already going to get 27 years, in his thinking, he took the extra 8. But what I suggest
you've answered the question. Thank you.
The question is, what happens now, given the fact that he's no longer a career offender? And I would argue to Your Honor, it wasn't a situation where it was 35 years, no matter what, because that's not what the plea agreement states. One, he has a right to appeal. If it was a binding plea agreement, why would he have the right to appeal, and why would I be standing here arguing? Because he expressly retained the right to appeal the sentence, and in the exact situation that we are now, if there was a change in the law, and there was a change in the law. The other point point was if it was 35 years binding on all parties, there would have been a plea pursuant to a B type of plea where it was 35 years and the judge would not have to have gone through the explanation of the guidelines. Judge Young, in terms of sentencing, goes through the guidelines in detail as to the drug offense, majority of that joint hearing, and then says in 8 lines only, oh yeah, let's get to the Michaels thing, the words to that effect. It's only a sort of an afterthought that the court takes into consideration the additional 8 years upward departure.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, Jennifer Zaks for the United States. In this case, I think as Chief Judge Howard's questions suggested, the district court's decision in this case, the original sentencing court's decision, was driven not by the guidelines. In fact, as the district court in this case found in denying the 2255, the career offender designation was an afterthought. Everything in the record shows that the parties and the district court at the time did recommend, and the district court adopted a 35-year sentence, not because of the career offender designation. In fact, that was something that was not even taken into consideration in any serious way. And you can see that by looking at several aspects of the record. The first would be the plea agreement itself. The plea agreement didn't even contemplate that the defendant would be designated a career offender. It gave a base offense level that was not consistent with that. And notably, the plea agreement was initially prepared before the plea SR, but it was signed and agreed to afterwards. In other words, even after the PSR had determined that the defendant qualified as a career offender, the plea agreement still maintained that the defendant did not qualify as one. Second, if you look at the joint motion, and a very unusual joint motion where the parties had recommend 35 years, which was a significant upward departure over any potential guideline sentencing range. It's clear that the basis of that upward departure, the agreed upon upward departure, was the exceptionally violent conduct of the defendant, which he admitted to in open court. And finally,
counsel, wasn't there? I don't have the precise wording in mind, but there was an exchange at the hearing in which the government suggests to the court that there be no reason for the defense to object to the career offender calculation, in essence, because that's not what's at issue here. Wasn't there an exchange to that effect before Judge Young?
That's exactly right, Your Honor. In fact, the court was questioning at the time the AUSA as to whether he agreed with the career offender designation. He said, in essence, neither party has objected to it, and the defense counsel has no reason to object to it in light of the agreement. And that exactly is one of the factors that strongly suggests and that they had no real role in playing the career offender designation, no real role playing, and that can be found in the joint appendix at page 115. And the district court also, both in its statement of reasons and in its statement of sentencing, made clear that the career offender designation played no real part in its determination of the sentence. The district court said something to the effect, this is in page 123 of the joint appendix, although I'm going to do the sentencing guidelines calculation, I'm disposed to depart on the basis of the joint motion. In other words, bifurcating the reasoning that the sentencing guidelines calculation was entirely separate from the basis of departure, which was on the joint motion.
But even if the career offender provision was not front and center here in the negotiations, there is the provision that allows for an appeal based on a change in the law. So if there had been a change in the law with respect to career offender from the time that the plea agreement was entered into until the time for filing an appeal after the sentence and judgment was entered, that still would have been a basis for appeal, right?
Right, the government, certainly, Your Honor. The government is not suggesting that the defendant's appeal is in some way invalidated by any agreement in the plea agreement.
And what do you think would happen in that event, since the guideline calculation would no longer be correct? Wouldn't there have had to have been a resentencing? Even though, as you say, the career offender designation played no role?
Your Honor is suggesting if it's not in the context of a 2255,
yes,
with its different standards.
Yeah, just a regular appeal under that provision.
Yeah, there might have been a resentencing because then the guidelines would have been incorrectly calculated, but the result would have been essentially the same because the sentence itself that the parties agreed to, and I presume the agreement would still be... It's a little hard to predict to give the hypothetical of what the parties would have agreed to in that case, but we know what they did agree to. And what they did agree to was, despite the fact that the PSR determined that the defendant was a career offender, and the parties did not object to that PSR, that was prior to sentencing, obviously, it was a pre-plea PSR, nonetheless, the parties still went forward with the 3-to-35-year sentence. In other words, that they were far above any conceivable guidelines, and the agreement itself did not incorporate the career offender designation by the probation department. So, in other words, it was regardless of whether the probation department determined that the defendant qualified as a career offender or the defendant did not, in fact, qualify as a career offender, as was suggested by the guideline sentencing range in the agreement. The parties still had the same determination as to what would be an appropriate sentence in view of the undisputed facts in this case. Unless the court has further questions, I would rest on our briefs for the remainder of the arguments.
All right. Thank you both.
Thank you.